There you go.
Well, good afternoon, gentlemen, and thank you for being up here. Anybody that was here last year and heard me speak, it's not going to be a heck of a lot different than last year, so I'll not give you time to go up and have a second cousin sub sandwich downstairs, right? If you haven't been here, it's great to have you. I really appreciate you taking the time out. I want to commend each and every one of you for being here at No Regrets. I came to my first No Regrets here at Westbrook about 5 years ago, and it was just, you know, phenomenal for me. And then I've been invited to speak, you know, the last 2 years. So taking some time out, it's a long day, but it's a real commitment. And, you know, for me, I renewed my walk with the Lord about 5 or 6 years ago, and No Regrets was a big part of that first year. I was very blessed to have some great men in my life, some good Christian men who, you know, I thought I had it all figured out. I was, you know, and again, what your walk of life is, I'm not telling anybody anything other than, you know, I was born and raised, you know, Catholic, and I thought I had it all figured out. I thought I knew where I was going. I thought I knew who my God was and who my Lord was. And then I realized about 5 or 6 years ago that I really needed to enrich and develop and drill down a much better relationship. And that's when it all started. You know, that's when I made my recommitment. So, again, I tip my hat to all of you for being here. There's always some great things to get out of it, whether it be the keynote or some of the breakouts. What I'd like to do today in, you know, about 45 minutes, and as I told the group before, the class before, I just taught the 11:15 class on this, I could literally spend days talking about the subject of investments, money management, you know, where to go. I mean, it could be a workshop. What I'm going to try and do today is touch on a number of kind of basic subjects, and you each should have an outline that's titled Practical Ideas for Saving, Investing, and Budgeting, and that's going to be our outline for the next 45 minutes or so.
John, where are those in case anyone needs some?
I'm sorry, sir.
Everyone have one?
I think we're all set, but there are some up here, Sal.
Got two guys back here.
Here, why don't you take a handful?
How are you, Johnny?
Good to see you, Sal.
Nice to be seen.
My friend Sal. He's my Bible study. He's my Bible study partner. But we're going to try and work through this as thoroughly as we possibly can. But before we dive into this, I just want to do a couple of housekeeping items. Number one, how many guys here read a devotional, a daily devotional? And again, I'm not taking names and numbers. I'm not calling your wives or anything. But this is a devotional I've been reading for about 4 or 5 years now, and I just absolutely love it. It's written by Stuart Briscoe, who is the, you know, former lead pastor at Elmbrook. I think he's now emeritus type role at Elmbrook. And Stuart wrote a one-day devotional. It's 365 days. As a matter of fact, there's one of the, on one of the handouts you have, there's a page from, I think, November 18th that might have been. That's right out of Stuart's book. This, to me, is just an awesome way to get the day going for me, for a man, for a Christian man. And Stuart really does speak to my heart, and there are a lot of great devotionals out there. It doesn't have to just be Stuart. But I would encourage you guys to maybe pick up a daily devotional and to find a quiet moment during your day. For me, I try and do it as early as I can. It doesn't always work that way. But, you know, as early as I can in the day to read the devotional. These were actually on sale, I think, last year. They had a table downstairs. I'm not getting a dime from anybody. I'm just telling you, this is a really good piece. The other thing, another one I wanted to talk about was, anybody doing any men's Bible study? Okay, great. That's awesome. For me, 5 or 6 years ago, when I came back to Christ, I used, and I'm still doing this with that guy right over there, a series called Design for Discipleship. This is the old Navigator Press series. And it's literally a 7-book series that, for me, renewing my relationship and applying the Bible to real-world themes, this was awesome. I mean, it forced me to crack open the Bible and to really study it and see how those apply to today's themes. This is book 6. We're in book 6. I've been doing this for 5 years. It's not a thick book, so you can see, you know, we talk about a lot of things besides just Bible study, but it's just an awesome way for me to get together with, you know, someone I love very dearly and study the Bible. So These are at Elmbrook. You can get these on Amazon.com. It's called Design for Discipleship, a seven-book series. If you're looking to do, has anybody done the old DVD, the Design for the Navigator? No? Okay. Well, it's food for thought. And the last thing I wanted to talk about from a housekeeping standpoint is I took a course here at Westbrook about 3 years ago called Authentic Manhood. And this was one of the subjects. It was called Winning at Work and Home. And we're going to, Robert Lewis wrote this series, and we're going to borrow some of Robert's themes today. But for me, this was an awesome, this was a 12-week course I took here. And if your church, if you go to, you know, Westbrook, great. If you go to one of the other big churches in the area or not, and you have a men's group within your church, I would strongly encourage them to look into this Men's Fraternity Authentic Manhood series. This was book two of the Authentic Manhood series. This one just happened to be Winning at Work and Home. Great subject matter in here. Outstanding stuff. So just a few little housekeeping pieces before we get into the outline. And I'd like to start talking about that. I failed to mention in the last course I just gave a talk to until the end, up on top, take a look underneath the title. It says, FYI, 2,300 passages in Scripture speak of the subject of money. It's the most widely talked about subject in the Bible. More than love, more than faith, is money. There's got to be a reason why it's brought up, and there's so many parables and stories. When I found that out, I didn't realize that. When I found that out, I was like just blown away. I've been helping people invest money for 20 years. Kevin said 18, and he forgot about the last 2 years. But almost 20 years I've been helping people, and you know, it just blew me away that that was the number one talked about passage, or there was so subject. There were so many passages. So God wants us to get our finances together. All right, so we need to spend some time. Now, whether you're the decision maker in the house or not, this is really important for you to be here. And what we're going to do is just talk about some real basic fundamentals, some budgeting issues, a formula that Robert Lewis talks about that I think is real important. And we will talk about some basic investing and savings principles as well. Look at bullet point number one. I do want to ask everyone this question. How many of you have a retirement plan at work, 401k, 403b, 457, et cetera, et cetera? Great. A lot of you. If you're self-employed, I hope you might have a SEP IRA or a simple IRA where you're contributing through your private practice or your personal business that you own. Take full advantage of forcing yourself to put money away in a retirement plan, like a 401k, a 457, a 403b, you know, if you work for the state or you're a school teacher, you know, everybody has these forced plans. Take full advantage of it. Lots of advisors out there will say, well, you should only put in up to the match, you know, if your company matches 3% or 5%. Some people say, you know, you should, you know, put in the max. The max you can put in a 401k plan today is $16,500. If you're over 50 years of age, you can put another $5,500 in on top of that. Take advantage of that. Now, the reason why I tell people to do that is, in most cases, companies will match some form of what your contribution is. Now, over the last couple of years, when the market turned in 2008 and, you know, went negative and we had a rough year, you know, throughout part of 2009, a lot of companies did what? They pulled their match off the table, all right, or they reduced it. In many cases, they just stopped matching. Hopefully, more companies now are starting to get back online and we're starting to see them match some percentage of your contribution. I mean, you want to do that. You want to squirrel that money away. My approach is put in as much as you can. You know, you'll hear, not Dave Ramsey, but I think Clark Howard every once in a while on the radio, you'll hear him say, and I know Susie Orman talks about this, and we won't talk about Susie today, but, I mean, her theory is, you know, only put in up to the match. If your company matches 5%, you should only put in 5% because at least you're getting 10%. And then with that money that you would have put in the plan, go ahead and open up your own IRA, you know, and make your own contributions, whether it be a Roth IRA or a traditional IRA. Well, I think there's some credence to that, because a lot of people say, well, an IRA on the outside is the world is your oyster. You know, you can buy thousands of mutual funds. You can buy stocks. You can put a lot of different investments in a self-directed IRA, whereas at, you know, your corporate 401k or your retirement plan, you know, you're beholden to that menu of 15 or 16 or 20 mutual funds. There's something to be said about that, but I love the 401k plan because it's forced savings. It's money that's usually coming right out of your paycheck. You're not seeing it. If it's going into the traditional side of the 401k, it's pre-tax. Some 401ks now have the Roth component as well as the traditional component, but it's pre-tax going into the traditional. And my approach is, if the company's giving you free money, take full advantage of it. If you're blessed even more and you work for a company that not only matches, but then they offer maybe a profit sharing. Anybody out there have a profit sharing kicker? Yeah. Then, you know, if that company has a good year, it's at their discretion where they'll even add more money into your 401k from a profit sharing standpoint. The company's profitable. They'll share those, you know, those good times, that income, that profit with their employees through the form of a profit sharing contribution. But I can't stress enough to at least, if it's out there and it's offered and you're eligible, that's where it starts. All right, that's where savings starts, right there. Okay, you take advantage of the tax-deferred growth. If it's a Roth, you take advantage of not only the tax-deferred growth, but then you have the tax-free distribution out of it as well at some point. On top of that, I'm assuming, I mean, again, kind of show of hands, who's got a regular traditional IRA or a Roth IRA out there? Great. Good. If you're able to contribute at work and add to a traditional or a Roth IRA on the outside, that means you're just that much further ahead. All right? You're squirreling away even a little bit more. All right? If you can hit your max at work, or even if you don't hit your max and you're still making a contribution into your individual IRA, you're putting money away tax deferred for future, you know, for long-term growth, for future income upon retirement. Okay. Now, those of you that are self-employed, you know the tax advantages of having an IRA. You know, that's deductible. If you already have a 401k at work and you're still putting money in, you know, you're putting money in the 401k and you're putting money in the IRA, your own self-directed, you don't have the same tax benefits in the IRA because you are already getting those tax benefits from the 401k. You have the tax-deferred growth, but it's not deductible income is what I'm saying. Self-employment, like I own my own business, I put money into my IRA account, that's a straight line deduction for me because I don't have a big company that's providing me a 401k contribution. But those first two bullet points are real critical. That's where it begins. Setting up a rainy day account, that's the third bullet point. And we talked a little bit about discretionary savings, and we'll drop that down, we'll drop down to the second part when we talk more about savings and discretionary. But setting up a rainy day account, a lot of advisors, a lot of pundits, you know, everybody from Dave Ramsey to, you know, Clark Howard to maybe your own financial advisors talk about what, you know, setting aside a rainy day fund or having this emergency fund. How much is really a very personal type of situation. I say you should be trying to set away at least 10% of your net income. Okay, net, not gross. It makes 80. You might be netting 60. See if you can't have $6,000 set aside. That's a minimum 10%. Most people talk about 3 to 6 months worth of savings. All right, it's not that easy. You know, if you're netting 60, it's not that easy to just, you know, cut yourself a check for $20,000 and say, oh, here's my rainy day fund. I'm all set now. You need to work towards that, but you need to be cognizant of the fact you should have something set aside. Everybody talks about it. And I'm not talking about the fund that's set aside for when the dishwasher breaks or the washing machine, or as I shared in the class before, just 10 days ago, my wife's transmission crapped out on me and I had to write a check for $2,600. I don't have a in case the transmission craps out account, you know. All right, that stinks, but it's there. This is for, you know, God forbid that company you've been working for the last 15 years or 8 years or 12 months says, hey, you know what? We got to let you go. All right? I mean, loyalty, I mean, I tell this story whenever I talk to people. I just said it an hour ago. My dad worked for the same company for 42 years. All right, that was a lifetime ago. All right, where you had that kind of loyalty and that kind of commitment. Where the company was, you were committed to the company, but the company was committed to you too. We don't see that anymore. I teach a class for people who are disengaged from their company. You know, they're in that transition period of time. And one of the statistics I tell them is, and this is I didn't pick this out of the air, statistics, there was a study that showed the average 25-year-old today is going to work for 8 different companies before they retire. So times have changed, all right? And I was doing the math myself. I'm like, well, I'm not there yet, but I mean, you know, my 20-year career in this industry plus, you know, about 7 years in a different industry, I mean, it can happen. It can absolutely happen. So that's what that, when I talk about a rainy day account, it's for that reason, all right? Setting something aside, and you need to build up to that. As I said, it'd be great if you got that big bonus at the end of this year or the end of last year and you said, this is it, I'm going to carve it out. But you need to work towards setting that aside, right? You need to build towards having that account set aside. So that's very critical, big part of saving. Where to invest, how to invest, what to invest in. If you look at bullet point number 4, this is I did not want to spend today, you know, I didn't want to come out here today. These are my top 10 stocks. These are my 3 favorite mutual funds. This is where I think you should be investing your money. Okay, but we need to be aware that, you know, the world revolves around investing when it comes to savings, okay? And for me, and my opinion, and granted, I own and my clients own individual stocks, but I like professional management when it comes to serious money. And what I mean by professional management is not having that hotshot dude out in New York managing a $1 million portfolio for you. I'm talking about a mutual fund. Good, basic mutual funds with professional management, all right? People that have been in the business a long time, that have been caretaking for that particular mutual fund, whether it be growth or it be bond or it be balanced, all right? I'm a big proponent of mutual funds, all right? I like other things too, you know, whether they be individual securities or exchange-traded funds. You know, there are lots of different types of investments. It could be bonds. It could be a bond fund. But in the world of setting up core investments, I'm a big proponent of mutual funds. I like no-load mutual funds where you can get you know, your expenses stripped out where it's less expensive. Now, you may have relationships with a stockbroker or an advisor where they have a certain type of mutual fund that they will sell you or offer to you. It might not be a no-load, but it might be the way they operate. You need to be aware of that. I mean, there's a price for everything. And I mean, if you have a relationship with an advisor, whether they be at Robert Baird or Edward Jones, you know, those people need to get paid too. But for me personally, I'm more, if you're doing it yourself or you're working through Schwab or Fidelity or you're working with an investment advisor, a third-party investment advisor, I like no-load mutual funds just from the fact that the internal expenses, the management fees are less. So it's just kind of a food for thought. So just be aware of that. The next bullet point under Section 1 talks about credit, interest, bad credit, good credit. This is a conversation I have with a lot of my clients when it comes to managing debt in their lives. And I very specifically say there's good debt and there's bad debt. And I bet my bottom dollar, you know, 99.9% of you know the difference. But just in case, you know, credit card debt is bad debt. That's bad interest. You know, when you've got companies out there charging 10, 12, 16, 18, 22% interest if you're not paying your bill every month, that's bad, all right? It's not good. It's really hard to get out of that hole, you know, if you're not paying your credit card debt back on a monthly basis, you know, in full. There's good debt like mortgage interest. That's probably the most classic example of good debt. And what I mean by that is that interest you're paying on that mortgage is what? It's deductible, right? It's a straight line deduction come tax time at the end of the year. So when I have a client say, you know, should I pay off my mortgage or should I pay down my mortgage, we usually have a conversation that says something like, well, there's good debt and there's bad debt. And having to pay an interest, you know, your mortgage is not the worst thing. If you can reduce your mortgage somewhat ahead of schedule, I'm not all for, I'm not against that. But I look at it and I try and frame it in such that, listen, paying down mortgage interest and paying on mortgage interest is not a bad thing. A home equity line of credit. I don't know how many people have a home equity line of credit, but that's another great, I encourage people that when you have equity built up in your home to go out and take out a home equity line of credit, not so much to spend it, but to just establish that line of credit. Guess what happens when anybody have home equity lines of credit? What do? You apply for it. They give you a percentage of the equity that you've built up in your house. And what's the next thing that happens? They mail you a checkbook, right? What do you want to do with that checkbook? Holy cow, I got a $30,000 line of credit right here. They just sent me a checkbook. Let's go spend. No, don't. Put it away. I tell people, put it in a drawer. Give it to me. I'll hold on to it for you. But that interest that you, when you do remodel that kitchen or you do some work on your basement or you do need to tap into it, the interest on a home equity line of credit is a deductible interest on your balance sheet as well. So, again, that's good interest. But we need to be aware of good interest and bad interest and what's out there. Bad debt. Credit card debt, that's got to be the number one anchor, in our society today is the credit card debt. It's tough. And it's not it's not a story that will end with a bad ending. You can get yourself out. You need to chip away at it. You need to work your way out of it. But, boy, if you've got it, that should be one of your number one focuses. And we're going to get into a formula right now that'll kind of help touch upon a number of different areas, especially, setting aside some additional savings to knock down things like credit card debt. If you go to number two, we're going to talk about this winning formula for managing your money. This I borrowed directly from Robert Lewis. He gets all the credit for this. Okay, it's an awesome formula, and it's a real basic, simple formula towards setting aside money. Dave Ramsey talks about envelopes, especially for beginning investors. Set up envelopes. Have your different little buckets. This is our mortgage envelope. This is our car payment envelope. This is our, we need a new washer and dryer envelope. And I think that's a really great way of doing, the process of saving, especially for new, young, just getting into the habit of saving kind of savers, so to speak. But as you get to be a little bit more advanced, you learn to manage your savings maybe through your checkbook. All right. The other thing you might would want to do is learn to save through this formula. So where do you start? MTH, basically. MTH is your monthly take-home. Right? That's your monthly take-home. It's what you take home. It's not your gross. It's what you see in your paycheck every month. Okay? That's what you start with. You subtract G. Robert Lewis, this isn't there by accident. It's the first deduction. It's gifting. It's donations. It's tithing. All right. For us to give or to get, we need to give. And Lewis makes it very clear, that should be the first thing we do. I'm not preaching. I'm not telling you how to do it. I'm just saying you need to make it a part of your life, whether it's 10%, 20%, 3%, 2%. If it, you give until it hurts, whatever that percentage is. I've been blessed in my life. I used to be the most reluctant tither in the world. And then I realized, again, what am I doing? It's not mine in the first place. It's all because of him. So you give back. So G is big. G just doesn't stand for Green Bay Packers today. It stands for giving, too. All right? So be aware of that. S is savings. And that savings is what we pay ourselves for the future. And that could be, that could be that rainy day. That's that emergency fund. That's future. All right. That's that 3 month, that 6 month that we talked about from a salary standpoint, in case the rug gets pulled out from under you. 1/12 of IE. IE, this is an interesting subject. Irregular expenses is what IE stands for. And then I put in parentheses, he talks about car insurance, repairs, school tuition. They're not every month like the mortgage, all right? But they're irregular as well. So sometimes it's hard to kind of get a grab. You're saying one twelfth of what? How do I know what it's going to be? Well, you do know what a tuition might be if you've got a kid in college or you're going to a private, high school. Your car insurance is not monthly, but it's typically, semi-annual or quarterly. So it's kind of irregular, but it's regular. But it's a number that you have to kind of get your arms around over a period of time. All right? Someone also said, well, what about, how do I figure out what irregular expenses are? I said, well, if your washer and dryer are 20 years old, you might want to start shopping around and getting an idea. If your stove is not working as well as it should be, you can put that down as an irregular expense and start squirreling a little bit of money away. So you can play with that particular subject in the formula. But you should be putting away a 12th every month. That's 1/12 is 1 month a year. CA is carefree allowance. Now, the interesting thing is when I took this class, it's a class for men, and he talks about we need to... We need to recognize and reward our mates through a carefree allowance for our wives. The interesting thing is, and again, I'm not going to ask you to raise hands, but somebody's wife in here might be managing the finances. All right? That happens. But the way Robert Lewis writes it is the man is handling the finances, and I've got some great stories, personal stories to share with you. But he says you need to reward, you need to embrace, you need to show your loved one, your spouse, and show how much you care for them by rewarding them with an allowance or a gift. So that's what CA is, carefree allowance. R&B is your regular monthly bills. Here we go. This is the mortgage. This is the car payment. This is the utility bill. This is the cable. You name it. They're all out there.
Cell phone
is, big. So those are your regular monthly bills, RMB. And then DM, we finally get down to the discretionary money. That's what we have left. And maybe we'll have something left. Maybe we won't. But that's why you budget, and that's why you work on this formula. DM, discretionary, might be our family. My kids are 10 and 7, and we've been to Disney World, a couple times over the last 10 years. And it was DM became a vacation fund for us. When we had discretionary income, we'd set it aside. And it just, again, became, it wasn't an envelope, but we were able to manage that. All right. Now, when I talk about up above, I'm just going to kind of go back again to the rainy day account, too. I stressed this morning. It should be a separate account. It should be a separate bank account. It should not be your rainy day, your emergency fund should not be managed out of the household account. And the reason why I tell you that is it's too tempting to have that there. I don't care how good you are at managing money. And Dave Ramsey talks about this a little bit in his class, where the educated saver, or money managed, person that managing your household expenses. You can begin to feel comfortable managing it in your own checking account or your savings account. There are some things, though, I want separated, just completely taken out of the equation, so they're not there to tempt you. That would be one of them. The vacation account, my wife, she set up a vacation account. And it was a separate account at a separate bank. I mean, it doesn't cost a whole lot these days to do that. Some accounts will charge you, an account fee. You got to be careful about that. But there are a lot of online accounts where the rate of interest might be actually a little bit higher than the traditional brick-and-mortar bank, and they won't even charge you for that. So food for thought. Getting back to what Robert Lewis talks about and how the man manages the finances, one of the best things I did, a personal story, is, and there are two types of spenders, all right, or savers. One is called a conscientious or conscious spender. The other is carefree. Okay. We might have a little bit of both in this room. All right, you may find your marriage is once very conscientious, all right, and one's very carefree. If you have two conscientious, that's a pretty amazing combination. If you have two carefrees, Katie, bar the door. Then you really need to sit down and start working it out. In my house, it's one's one and one's the other. I'll let you guys figure out who's who. But one of the best things I did was I sat down with my wife and we really started working through a budget together. And we're going to get into budgeting here very shortly. But I got her involved for many, many, many years. I just figured, you know what? I'm the professional. I've been doing this for 20 years. I'm the man. You know, she just needs to do what she needs to do. And, you know, she's good at this. I'm good at that. And it wasn't a real good idea for us. And it may not be for you. I'm going to encourage you to try and get your spouses involved in the process of budgeting. And working through a budget sheet together. You know, this is not a vacuum I'm talking to you in today. It's got to be done together. And it really opened and enlightened my wife personally. And it made my life that much easier, too. Because I was handling a lot of it myself. I was dealing with a lot of the stress of it. And, you know, just feeling like I had the weight of the world on my shoulders from a budget standpoint because, you know, I'm the guy. Well, it's amazing, too, how when you open that up to the other loved ones in your life, how much easier things get. That's a very personal story, and hopefully it might work for you. If you're not, I would encourage you trying it. With that in mind, let's move on to, and I'm happy to take any questions. What I'd like to do is just wait until the end. Let's move on to the budget sheet. You should both have a budget, you should all have two budget sheets. One is a single side, one is a double side. These are for you to keep. How many people here do budgets? That's great. Oh, that's awesome. That is amazing to see. That's about half this room. That's not the average. You know, to me, there's a lot of very conscientious men in the room, you know, that are working towards, you know, building a peaceful and a respectful financial future in your life. Now, these are just samples. These are two I use in my daily business. When I sit down with a couple that is not budgeting or they're trying to budget and they're working on an Excel spreadsheet or whatever, I say, here's a couple of the samples you may want to use. One, the single-sided one, they're both, I think, very detailed, but the single-sided one is it's a little bit more broader brushstrokes. You know, it talks about income, it talks about expenses, it talks about taxes, but they do some consolidating on that sheet. This one, this two-sided one, is very robust. I mean, it really gets into details. And if you're a detailed person, you know, you're going to want to know, well, honey, what are we spending on? I mean, if you go back to, you know, food and household on the second side, you know, it got toiletries, supplies, baby supplies. I mean, you know, my wife and I, we just kind of call it groceries now. Our kids are getting a little bit older, you know. But, I mean, you can really break this down. I mean, clothes purchases, laundry, hair care, I mean, I've seen some shoe shines, you know, I mean, whatever. But I'm just saying it's a very detailed budget sheet. And you can, you know, you might say, I like this one better than this one, or I like maybe a combination of the two, or you might create your own. The key is, are you doing a budget? And, you know, whatever works for you. And try and stick to it, all right, and tweak it. We have been budgeting now for a number of years. And every year we always, you know, we go back to it more than, you know, on a yearly basis. You know, we might have changes in our lives, you know, financial changes where you need to go back. You know, my wife, God love her, I mean, it was like, you know, she had an epiphany, you know, a month or two ago, and we needed to go right back to the budget and say, okay, what's going on here? Something doesn't look right. You know, we need to make some changes. You know, this is how much this really costs. And the budget does that. You know, and don't fudge, don't cheat, because when you do, it's only going to end up hurting you in the long run, right? You need to be very honest when you set that budget. Again, I'm going to reiterate the conscientious versus the carefree spender or saver. Know yourself, know who you are in that regard, okay? Let's move on to this love letter, okay? You should all have a sheet with two sides. And on one side is the money and meaning, but on the other side is this love letter to my wife. And again, I've come to the realization that Robert Lewis, and in this class I'm going to teach it as, this is a love letter we're going to write to our wives. Some of you may not have wives yet, but someday you will. Okay? And this is something, I see some young faces in the crowd, and the fact that you're here and you're wanting to learn about this If you're married, great. You need to write a love letter. If you're not married, this is something you should be thinking about at some point. I have always stressed, and before I saw this, you know, the light bulb went out of my head going, this is amazing the way Lewis puts this together in this format. I've always encouraged my clients to do planning, you know, have a will, at least, at the very least. Do some estate planning. Know where, you know, important documents are in your life. Share those with your spouse. But what this does is it pulls it all together. And he says, you know what? You're going to be doing her the biggest favor in the world. What I realize, though, is in some cases, it might be the wife writing the love letter to the husband. In this case, we're all husbands writing it to our wives. But there are households where the wife is handling all of the finances and all the money management decisions. You know, and she should probably write one to her husband. But in this case, if this applies, we want to write one to our wife. And what goes into this love letter? The first bullet point, obviously, is you want to let her know what your last words would be. That's very personal, obviously. You write this letter the way you feel, you know, from the heart. And you tell her how you feel. But in that love letter, you want to have important things from a finance and from a household finance standpoint. Where are the wills? Is it a living will? Is there a living will? Do we have a power of attorney out there? Where are these documents? They're in a safe deposit box at this particular bank. They're in the dresser drawer. You know, they're in the desk drawer downstairs, honey. You want to have that very specifically listed. List your assets. What are the account numbers? What banks are they at? What are the names and addresses? That next bullet point that says values. Well, I mean, you can update this letter. You know, the value today might not be the same value in 5 years, obviously, so you can maybe give some broad brushstrokes. What I found is I got my wife more involved in the finances and the budgeting. She's got a pretty good idea what the values are with the accounts, whether it be the bank account or an investment account. Okay. Where are they? I don't know about you, but I've got three or four bank accounts at three or four different banks. So when they talk about, you know, account numbers, names, and addresses, you know, make sure. You know, we got one at M&I. We might have one at Associated. We might have one at Town Bank. We might have an online account. So be very specific, all right? The days of, I think, where you maybe have one banking relationship are kind of long gone. List your major liabilities. She needs to know, you know, what's the mortgage? Do we have a, you know, do we have a mortgage on the main residence? Do we have a cottage up north? Do we have, you know, car bills that we need to pay? Who, you know, who are the lenders on that? All right. What are the amounts? What are the due dates? Is there any collateral out there we need to be aware of? Then you go to the next level, which is naming contacts of your important advisors. What I mean by that is, you know, do you have a financial advisor? Do you have an insurance advisor or agent? Do you have an attorney? Do you have a CPA? Those are all things she's going to need to know. All right? This, I mean, we're talking about mortality here, but I mean, she's already, although I joked, I said, you know, maybe somebody's wife might be jumping up and down with joy, but I doubt it. She's already going to be feel like she got hit by a ton of bricks when this happens. So you can imagine how she's going to feel, you know, when she starts feeling like, you know, where's the money? Where are the accounts? So you can see how valuable this is going to be. Life insurance. Do you have life insurance? Where is it? How much is it? Who's the carrier? Home and car insurance. What, you know, are we paying monthly, quarterly? What was the name of that State Farm agent or whoever you use? You know, you need to have that. Funeral preferences. If you've got anything, obviously, I'm probably not telling something you don't know, but, you know, if you do have special preferences, you need to be aware of that. Okay? Giving from an estate planning standpoint is critical. I once had a client, I worked for a large bank in town in the trust department before I started my own business. And, you know, one guy was a former retired sheriff, and he wanted all of his money to go to the NRA, and she loved animals, and she wanted her half to go to the Humane Society. You need to know that stuff. And I think that's wonderful. And they drew up a trust where, you know, some of it was going to the NRA and some of it was going to the Humane Society. But you don't know that if it's not set there. So she needs to know. And then lastly, you know, she needs to know where the letter is. It's great that you do all this work and you write this wonderful letter, but if she doesn't know where the letter is, you know, she's not going to find it, or it could be months after that she finds it. You know, a client of mine came to me the other day. He's helping me on a project, and, you know, he's in his late 60s, and he says his wife always worries because she doesn't know much. And his approach is, don't worry about it. You've got John, you know, me. Well, that's great, but, you know, I'm disposable too. You know, we all are. So be aware of it. This is really a neat thing to set up. I was very impressed when I saw Robert Lewis and the way he presents a very difficult subject. I mean, a lot of people don't want to do the estate planning because, you know, they know they're talking about their mortality, their immortality. So, you know, that's just, it's important to go through. The fifth subject down here, it talks about Christian thoughts and observations on money market. We didn't even, or money and wealth. I didn't even get to this subject this morning. But I brought some articles that have appeared in some mainstream publications. I've got a few copies. One was in Time magazine a few years ago. I don't know if anybody saw that, you know, but it was the title of the article, I think, was, you know, Does God Want Us to Be Rich? And it was all on the whole prosperity light approach to evangelical faith and the Osteens down in Houston, and, you know, they're preaching that God does want us to be, you know, wealthy, not only in faith, but in money. And there's some interesting articles out there. And I'm not sure where you fall on this, but if you want it, I've got, come on up after if you'd like, and we can talk a little bit about it. With that said, I've got about 5 minutes. I'd be happy to take some questions. If you have any, go ahead and ask. Yeah, go ahead.
My 401k, I have go through Wells Fargo.
Yeah.
And I have the ability to just move them around where I want.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I have one that's at the high point, is that sort of like a stock where I can move that around while I lose the money that it generates from that high point?
You're talking about the mutual fund that you own in the 401k? Well, you can move in and out of mutual funds as you see fit in your 401k. Now, I mean, if you bought that mutual fund and you've never added another penny to it at 8 and you sold it at $10 a share, you know, you're out. Now, there's no telling. It could go to 12 or 14 or 20, or it could go to 6. So I'm not sure if I follow your question, but you can.
Well, would it be like a like trading a stock?
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't think trading mutual funds is really, no one should make a habit out of trading mutual funds. As a matter of fact, a lot of brokerage firms won't even allow you to trade a mutual fund like some people trade a stock. But you can move in and out of a mutual fund as you feel whether it's good for where you are in your life right now. We talked about in the previous class, I had a marker, but, you know, one of the things you need to know about investing is every investor has a pie chart. You know, start out with a circle, and, you know, depending upon where you are in your life, I thought I had a pen up here. Here it is. You know, depending upon where you are in your life cycle, you know, it's going to depend upon, you know, how you invest. And, you know, those of us that are 25, most of that pie is going to be pretty aggressive because we've got a long horizon in front of us. You know, if we're 60 and you know, 5 years or 10 years away from retirement, you know, now all of a sudden, you know, you might find that your pie chart is not as aggressive. Being able to shift and move within your 401k, your investments, is all about, you know, where you personally feel you need to be. And you have the ability. What I don't encourage people to do is, you know, don't be owning this great growth fund this week and then turn around and sell it next week and then try another one and, you know, chase. There's a thing called chasing the hot dot. You know, you used to get, you know, you get Fortune magazine or Money magazine, and they talk about the top 10 mutual funds of the year. What does everybody do? They see that, they put all their money in that top 10 mutual fund from the previous year, and what does that mutual fund do the new year? It craps out, you know, or it doesn't do well. You know, because there's another new one, you know, in the background that's ready to be. I mean, it's just, you got to be very careful with that. Yeah?
What's your thought regarding Dave Ramsey's talk where he discusses life insurance policies and he recommends the term and then investing the rest of your money into mutual funds or something else as opposed to putting it into a hold or a variable where that's part of your thought?
Yeah.
What's your thought?
Well, I'll be happy to share my thought, my opinion. And again, I've been at this for a long enough time that this is my opinion. I feel strongly about it, but I'm a big term life insurance guy. I, you know, and there might be insurance salesmen in this room, or you might be married to one, or no, not married. Yeah, you might be married to one, or you might have a brother or a sister or an uncle or whatever. And they're all out there making a living, and we have a big company here in town that does like to talk about their dividend rate and the importance of saving and, you know, looking at insurance not only for life protection but also as a savings vehicle. And I get a little concerned about that sometimes because I look at whole life insurance and I'm like, you know, it provides a safety net, but when they're out there preaching or telling us that it's a savings vehicle, you know, that cash value that's built, look at your cash value grow, that cash is not yours. You can borrow against it, and you can pay a rate of interest to borrow against it, and if you die and you've got a loan on that cash value of 20 or 30 or 50 grand, it's going to decrease your death benefit to your heirs. You can never go with it, okay? You can never pass your cash value on. So I do have some very personal thoughts and opinions on that. My approach is buy life insurance for a period of time in your life, whether it be when your kids are young, and you need that security, or, you know, to cover a mortgage on a home. You know, the one thing that dropped, I used to work for a family office in town. We had some very wealthy families. And, I mean, I would see people in their 70s and 80s with these huge whole life policies with huge amounts of cash value. And it just didn't make sense. You know, what were you doing with this? You know, and they had it at a very important time in their life, and it kept going. You know, I look at it as a say, buy insurance for periods or tranches in your life that you really feel that, you know, is imperative to have.
So not as an investment?
I don't look at it as per se as much of an investment, no, personally. Any other questions? I know we're kind of getting close here. One last one, yeah.
On the winning formula,
yeah.
You've got carefree allowance before you've got your regular monthly bill.
Yeah.
Are those in order of importance, or are those just randomly put on there? I mean, you've got giving as your first thing, so
well,
I assume that's the most important, obviously.
Lewis talks a lot about rewarding your loved one, your spouse, the importance of making sure your spouse knows that they are loved and cared for. And he feels that is an expense that's even above and beyond your rate. Now, you might not be, you know, but if my wife wants $2,000 a month from me, she ain't getting it, okay? I love her to death. What he says is you need to create a bucket or you know, a silo of what is that amount going to be. And that you need to express to her, you're above the utility bill, honey. You are more important to me than the cell phone bill. All right, so that's why that is there, and from an important standpoint, it's food for thought. That's his theory. I look at him like the whole formula is important, you know. But he literally does. He rates that as, you know, she needs to be there from an important standpoint. Thanks.
All right.
Yeah, appreciate it. Have a great rest of the day. Thank you.